Dr. Gisela Eisner, Reel 3. Yes, you were telling me about the family, weren't you, and what Mr. Gwynedd did. He was a tax inspector.
No,
clerk.
Not a tax inspector. He was a clerk on the Inland Revenue. And I'm sure it was very just a simple, humble income, but they managed pretty well. They were highly organized, and that really impressed me. Their whole way of living impressed me. I mean, the way food was, the menu was organized for a whole week. You know, the cooking was done for the week, the baking was done for the week, and then throughout the year, sort of things happened at different times of the year, like jam making and bottling of fruit, and then Christmas preparations, and then other preparations in the summer. I was terribly impressed at this sort of highly organized, orderly life, and it came as a real revelation to me. And I loved school as well, because I went to school. They put me into the Wolverhampton Girls High School, where Joyce was, and John went to the grammar school there. And I thought the school was wonderful. I mean, I'd been to a progressive school where you just sort of worked if you wanted to, and now I was in a school where you'd really well have to, because you got black marks if you didn't conform, and you got red marks if you did terribly well, and there were all sorts of rules about the wearing of uniform and what you were allowed to do and what you weren't allowed to do. I thought it was really marvellous, absolutely marvellous, and I became a great conformist. I did everything proper, in the proper way. And then I fell down terribly on my performance in the classroom, because I just simply didn't have the background. I didn't know anything about the sciences, because they hadn't been taught at our school in Berlin, which was very on the arts and literature side. And my maths was practically non-existent as well. So at the end of the first year, no, it wasn't the end of the first year, it was the summer term. That's right, I'd only been at school for just about a term. I did the end of year examinations at that time. And I did, my exam results were absolutely appalling on those subjects, so they decided that I shouldn't do the, because I would be going into the class where people would be starting on the school certificate preparations. They decided that there was no way I was going to catch up with all the lost time, and they decided I'd do the domestic science rather than the strict academic course. And I just sort of did commercial maths and sewing instead of science and the usual sort of academic maths. It didn't worry me. I thought this was fine, really. I wouldn't have to do all that extra work catching up. I loved school. Absolutely nothing to be said against school. It was really marvelous. And spent our time, kept very busy all the time, because the Gwynedds were very keen on the scouting movement. Mr. Gwynedd was a rover leader, and we all joined the guides and scouts. And very active girl guide movement it was. We did a lot of things. I soon had a whole armful of badges I acquired. And some of these badges we got by, we had to prepare for them. We had to attend training sessions on things like nursing and things like that, or first aid, before we could get the badge. It wasn't just a question of handing out badges for nothing. And yes, it was all very, very good.
How about the language? How are you getting on with English at this stage? You know, presumably you were speaking. The fact that
went to
a high school.
Yes, well, I suppose I picked it up pretty quickly. And they did send me to a retired teacher for a bit, and she gave me a few lessons for a short while and helping me. But then I think really there's nothing to better being thrown in for a child, being thrown into the, and having to communicate. Mm. No, I don't think there was any problem there at all about language.
Yes. Well, was this family a Jewish family?
Oh, no. We went to church. Went to church in the morning, went to Sunday school in the afternoon, and sometimes we even went to church in the evening. Yes.
How did you take to that?
Took to it all right, didn't worry me. I mean, I didn't have any ghosts to stay on my background. I hadn't been brought up in a sort of orthodox Jewish way. It didn't worry me at all. Mind you, I didn't conform totally because there was something, I would never kneel down in church, and nobody ever bothered about the fact that I didn't kneel down. Nobody ever sort of said, you know, when you go into church first, you're supposed to kneel down and pray. Nobody ever said that to me. I mean, they must have noticed, but it didn't seem to worry anyone.
How about your family? Were you still in touch with your parents?
Yes, I was in touch until the summer, yes.
Yes, because I suppose now we're going into, into 1939, are we?
Yes. Well, those examinations I did so brilliantly at were in June 39, weren't they, or July 39, yes. Mm-hmm. So that was really the term.
Mm-hmm. Well, were you getting any news? I know that, you know, during that period there wouldn't have been television, and but I wondered if you, say, were hearing radio broadcasts about the situation in Europe and Germany and how you felt about things.
No, we listened to the news in the evenings. You usually had the news on at 9 o'clock, I think it was. And I think it wasn't really until August, was it, till there was that build-up with Chamberlain going all over the... Yes. I didn't think there was anything much. I mean, there wasn't any news which I would have felt would affect my parents in particular. And now when my parents wrote, they always sort of wanted to know how I was doing and hoped I was doing all right, and to send my best wishes to the Gwinnett family and tell me about what all the other friends were doing, because they still had a lot of non-Jewish friends there. And
do you think, you know, when you came to Britain, you expected to stay so long, or did you think you might be going back to Germany? What were your expectations? Can you...
I don't think I gave it a thought. I never thought at all, and I never thought of what I would do when I grow up either. Never had any idea at all. I think I must have just been living for the day. No, I can't think that I ever had any expectations. I must have had a vague feeling that my parents would never leave Germany. I think that had somehow become clear, because they so clearly weren't making any efforts. But I mean, I would never have thought that they would not continue to live even miserably as they lived in that miserable flat. I would never have thought that they would not continue like that. It never occurred to me that they might have to leave there.
How about little Helmut, your brother? Well, I suppose he was your elder brother, wasn't he?
Yes.
Did you hear from him? And I wondered if you missed him at all.
Yes. We weren't all that close, but I heard quite a lot from him and about him, because our headmistress was very concerned about him. And she wrote me a letter. I've still got that correspondence, actually. She wrote to say that at that stage, she could no longer get him on a kinder transport, because by that time they had sort of lowered the age at which they were taken. I think he was over 15 by then, as he must have been, yes. But she was trying to get him a permit to come, and she said, I was staying with my aunt at that time. She said, she gave me the name of somebody, or rather at Bloomsbury House or somewhere, I forget nowhere, to get my aunt to talk to this man and see what could be done. But my aunt was sort of too busy. She couldn't cope with that. Anyway, Vera Lachmann persevered, and she actually got my brother a permit. And it arrived early in... She wrote in for the end of the first week in August to say that the permit was on its way, but I think there must have been some delay in coming, because it didn't arrive in time for him to come then. But I know she worked terribly hard for him to do something.
Do you remember the day war broke out? What you were doing?
I don't remember the actual day, no. Actually, yes, I do. Yes, it wasn't sort of like the day Kennedy was assassinated, where you were We were actually on our way to Wales to commist with, because the Gwynedds had decided that war was going to break out, and that when war did break out, it would be just like in Poland, and everybody who lived in a town would be bombed like Warsaw was. And they had a relative who had a cottage in Comistwith near Devil's Bridge. And it happened to be available. So he took us all down there, and we were on our way the day war broke out. So that was 2 days after they started bombing Poland, wasn't it? Yes, that was right, yes. We stayed there for 2 weeks. It was beautiful, lovely, lovely part of the country. I took Herbert back there. We hadn't been there for years and years, and I was sort of wondering, would I still think it was wonderful? And I took Herbert there. He thought I was just sort of being silly, you know, romancing it all, and he was very impressed as well. I was terribly impressed because I had never been on such a sort of wild and uninhabited part of the world before. I don't know, do you know Mid-Wales at all? I mean, you can go for miles and miles and not see a soul and not even see a sign of a house. And this cottage was all on its own. I mean, it was slightly closer to the village than I had remembered, but nevertheless, it was quite a long way away, and we were allowed to do all sorts of things. We were allowed to go up on the top of a hill and build a cairn and just imagine being able to take stones and putting them there, and building dams on the river. And nobody said, you're not allowed to do that. That was really wonderful. I think that's the first really marvelous holiday I ever had as a child, because we never went on holiday in Germany. Yes, I was telling you about Mr. Gwynedd's job. He was a clerk in the Inland Revenue. And in 1940, and this must have been in the early summer of 1940, he applied for promotion. And he got promotion, and he got promotion to a job in Chesterfield. So we moved to Chesterfield, and that was quite a change from Wolverhampton. It was a change all around, because by that time Joyce had left. She'd become a nurse, and she was going to go on to train as a physiotherapist thereafter. And we lived in Chesterfield, and I wasn't transferred to another school, and it was never really explained or discussed or talked about, and I was put into the School for Arts and Crafts to do dressmaking and design. And it never occurred to me to ask why this decision had been reached, and that was actually the thing about the Gwynedds, that one never talked things over. Everything was sort of implied. It's slightly incredible to people, I think, nowadays, because most people will talk things over and discuss things. But they didn't. I don't know how general that was among people, that they didn't talk things over. I think they had decided that Joyce was going to be a nurse. I don't think they'd ever discussed that with her either. And I think they decided that John was going to be a surveyor or something like that. And they transferred him to the Chesterfield Boys Grammar School. But they put me into the School for Arts and Crafts. And I did a one-year course there. And I learned a lot about dressmaking and a little bit about design. And at the end of the year, I got a certificate in dressmaking from the Royal Society of Arts and Crafts. And then Mrs. Gwynedd thought that I'd done so well in dressmaking. First class, my certificate was first class. That she thought it would be a good idea for me to be apprenticed in the local department store to the millinery department. And that was the first time I ever demurred at any decision made on my behalf. And I said, no, I didn't really like the idea. And I really didn't like the idea. I had no objection to learning how to make hats, but I just didn't want to spend all day long with a lot of older women, as I would have done there. And this apprenticeship would have been for 3 years, which seemed a lifetime. So she said what else to do, and then after a bit of looking around, she said, what about a secretarial course at the local tech? And I liked that idea. I liked being with children of people of my own age. I just didn't want to be cooped up with a lot of older people. I didn't particularly like people, older women anyway. They always asked me silly questions. They always asked me, where are your parents and things like that. And girls, my contemporaries, never asked me anything. They just accepted me. They never asked me anything. They never sort of said, why aren't you living with your parents, or why don't you kneel down in church or anything. They just accepted me. So it's absolutely wonderful. And perhaps I also ought to mention that I never met any other refugees all the time, except once in Wolverhampton. There was a girl from Czechoslovakia who was also at this school. For a very short while, she disappeared then. But I never spoke any German all that time, and I never met any other refugees until... Actually, I left Chesterfield, yes, that was another 3 years. I lived in Chesterfield for 3 years. Yes, that secretarial course was excellent. It was lovely. Very nice people, and everybody was very friendly. And yes, I found out all sorts of things. Yes, at the end of the secretarial course, I was given a job in the office at the technical college, and the clerk to the governor's office. And I didn't do anything particularly important. I just sort of stuck on stamps and kept a record of the letters sent out to people, because they always had to check up that nobody was subverting this postage stamp for private purposes. And it was a very friendly place. I mean, when I was working there in the office, I sort of, people used to come in and chat, and the staff used to come in and chat. And then I discovered that it was possible to catch up on education at that London University. Operated this business of external students working for exams and sitting for their examinations. So once I discovered that, I thought this was the answer to what I've been looking for. And I did, first of all, did the London matric, which I had to do, had to pass before I was admitted to a degree course. So I started going to night school, and that kept me very busy. And at the end of that year, I took that exam. I had an awful lot of help from people, because my maths was practically non-existent when I started off, and there was a teacher there who gave me extra help with maths, so I could do that. I remembered enough French from my school days, and I caught up in English, and I was allowed to offer German. I remembered enough German to do the German paper, so I got my London matric without any difficulty. And yes, by that time the refugee movement had rediscovered me as well. And there was a lady, Miss Barnett, who came to see me in Chesterfield. I don't remember all her visits, actually. I only remember her last one, but I've got a record of her visits, because that is in the photocopied record I've got from the movement. She came to see me 3 times. She wasn't terribly accurate in what she wrote. And the third one I remember because she actually invited me out to lunch. She took me to lunch at the local Odeon cinema, and we had a 3-course meal. And then we talked. And I was actually quite upset about her, with her, because she wasn't in the least bit interested in my taking the London matric and wanting to do anything like that. And she didn't ask me how I was managing to do it and when I was going to do it and where I was doing the exam. They asked me nothing at all. She just seemed to be interested in whether I felt Jewish or not and whether I was sort of interested at all. Which was really a ridiculous thing to do, because by that time I'd lived in Chesterfield for almost 3 years, I mean, there wasn't a synagogue in Chesterfield, and I hadn't been sort of attending anything remotely connected with Judaism for a long time. I thought it was really quite silly. And I thought it was not very nice of her not to take an interest in what I was doing. And Stephen, by that time, had come back. He'd been an intern in Australia for quite a long time. And he'd come back.
Yes, this is interesting, you know, Stephen, because when you first met him, you know, during the war, I suppose it was quite a gap in the years.
Terrible gaps, yes, yes. He came to London in May 39, and the Gwynneths gave me a train ticket to meet him then. And I went to London and saw him. And then they gave him the fare to, because he wasn't earning, he didn't have a job, they gave him the fare to come up to Wolverhampton for Christmas. So that was very nice. I had my big brother there. I always hero-worshipped him. He really, really, really something special he was. And then he was the only relative I had. I mean, not those unspeakable people in Edgware. They weren't relatives anymore. I never heard from them, you know, not at all. After I went to Wolverhampton. And where was I? Oh, yes, about Stephen, yes. Then he was interned in 1940, and he was sent off to Australia, and he spent quite a long time there. I think it was about 2 years before I saw him again. He came to see me in Chesterfield, wearing the uniform of a pioneer corps. He didn't like that at all. And then, yes, he came once or twice to Chesterfield. But obviously he didn't want to waste a lot of time spending with his precious leave going to Chesterfield. So I started going down to London to stay there as well while he was there. That was all right. I just had to go to the police station to get permission to enter the forbidden zone of London. And I always got that. There's no problem. It's just a sort of bit of red tape one had to adhere to. And I met all his friends there.
Was it important for you suddenly to have a close relative? You
know, very important, yes. Very important, yes. 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 I hadn't actually realised how much I missed. I mean, I thought he was always there somehow, even if I didn't see him, but it was actually very nice to have him there in the flesh. It was terribly important. It became even more important later on.
This policy of internment, you know, when Stephen was interned and sent to Australia, did that affect you at all, you know, when the so-called enemy aliens system came in? Would you have been affected by that as a woman, young woman?
Well, actually, it was, I thought this, looking back on it, was quite amusing, because when we first moved to Chesterfield, Mr. Gwinnett had to tell the local police force that I was staying with them as an alien, because it was 1941, I think. Yes, 40. Yes, 1940. I was just 15. And two plainclothes policemen arrived at the house. I think they gave them due notice that they were going to come, and they sort of sat there in the living parlour for quite a long time. And they talked for ages and ages, and then they called me in. I was terribly nervous, knowing that they were policemen. I'm sure I didn't answer their questions at all. I'm sure I was sort of shaking with nervousness. Anyway, at the end, after they'd gone, Mr. Gwinner told me that they told him that I was one of the few genuine refugees they'd ever met. And that was my only contact. I mean, thereafter, I had to always get permission before I went to London. I always had to get permission. But that's the only way it affected me until I was going to come to that. I got a job in London. And then the Ministry of Labour got to know about me. You see, I had this job at the Chesterfield Technical College in the office there. And I mean, I had no particularly clear ambition of what I wanted to do with my life. I just sort of felt that I wanted to do something different or more interesting, or didn't just want to be a junior clerk in the office for all my life. And on one of my visits down to London, one of Stephen's friends, Joy, talked to me. I don't know whether Stephen had put her up to it or not. He may have suggested to her that she should do something about it. She said, had I ever thought of having a job in London, living in London? I thought, it's marvelous, living in London. All that glamour and all these people, interesting people. And she got me a job in London, because she herself had a very glamorous job. She was the social secretary to the Honourable Mrs. Alfred Lyttelton, who was the mother of the then Lord President of the Board of Trade, Lyttelton. You know the name. And she had some connection too with the English-speaking Union, and Joy got me a job with the English-speaking Union. So I applied. I didn't know anything about the Ministry of Labour and the restrictions then. I just applied to move to London with the, as usual, you know, as I had to. And I think there must have been some sort of communication between the police force and the Ministry of Labour. Anyway, the Ministry of Labour wrote and said, no, permission refused, would I go to a certain job in Nottingham? So I was given, told about this job of it waiting for me in Nottingham, and I had to go there. And, yes. I must say, the Gwynneths were very good about it all. When I first told them that I was thinking of going to London, I mean, they weren't at all surprised. I think they had sort of realized when Stephen came back that I'd sort of want to spend more time there. And I think they were ready to be on their own as well, because Joyce no longer lived at home and John had moved out. And I think they were quite looking forward to being on their own.
During all this period, how had you managed financially? You know, from the moment you came to Britain, what was the financial situation? Did your parents, for instance, in the early days, have to pay for your keep, or did it come from another source?
No, I don't think the question of finance ever arose, because the people who took care of me would pay for my upkeep.
Did they not get a sum of money from any authority?
Not that I know of. No. I mean, the Marks, I don't think they ever sort of said that. No, I mean, I didn't really see what sort of extra expense they would have had. I mean, it's just a bit of extra food, isn't it? They had the room, the space. The Marks people never bought me any clothes. I mean, they actually... I tell you what it was that made them... I have to go back to an earlier tape now. Before they decided to put me in a taxi and send me off back to my aunt and uncle, they had actually told me that as I would be 14 years old soon, in the not-too-distant future, they would suggest that I go and work in Mr. Marks's factory. Mr. Marks was making clothes, sort of a subcontractor to my uncle's factory. And I think I must have looked not over-enthusiastic at that, and I think that was probably the final straw that decided them to send me back to my uncle. Yes, the Gwynneths, I'm sure they never had any money to keep me. I think probably the schooling was probably free. Probably the Wolverhampton Girls High School decided they'd waive fees or something like that. And I don't think really, I mean, the way they lived, I don't really think that they had any expenses really with me. I mean, I don't remember sort of getting a lot of new clothes and things like that. I mean, they lived very carefully.
Did any of these people that you stayed with, did they give you pocket money?
I don't remember. I really don't remember. I mean, for the Gwynneths, we probably got tuppence or threepence or something like that a week. I mean, if their children got it, I'm sure I would have done. I just don't remember, because I didn't remember going out shopping and spending the money. I think we probably did later, because we were encouraged to save it, that's right. I think it may have been pocket money on a piece of elastic. We were given it, but not given it to save, because I remember we all had National Savings Certificates, that's right. We saved up for that, that's right.
How about the news from home? You know, how did you continue to receive communication for your parents or brother?
Not once war broke out, not for ages.